This is Rick Wood. I have the pleasure of being with Representative Rob Whitman of the 1st District of Virginia of the House of Representatives. Rob, thanks so much for taking the time.
Rick, what an honor and pleasure it is to be with you, to join you on your podcast.
Well, I know you're a politician because you said it's an honor, so I know you told your first lie of our conversation. But anyway, what I was hoping to do, if we can, Rob, is to talk about some of the issues that are unique to towns that front the Potomac,
sure.
Some of the issues that we have. If you'd be kind enough to give us some of your bona fides of your stance on conservation. It's a big part of your website, and I'm hoping you could flesh that out for us.
Absolutely. Well, I am a real advocate for things that need to be done to conserve, you know, our national treasure, that is the Chesapeake Bay. That was my professional life. I worked with the state of Virginia running the seafood safety program at the field level for a number of years. So I got to see it every day, and I know how important it is for our local economies. I know how important working waterfronts are. In fact, I have a bill in called Protecting Working Waterfronts. We want to make sure that people that make their living off of the water are able to have access to those waterfront areas,
mm-hmm.
Because that's where they have to land their catch. It's where it's best to process the catch. My son's a commercial fisherman, so it runs deep in our family. So those things are incredibly important. We know how important it is there to the town of Colonial Beach. I remember in my years with the health department there going and inspecting a number of seafood processing facilities there in the Colonial Beach area. I knew too there in Maddox Creek,
mm-hmm.
significant amount of oyster grounds there. In fact, in Virginia, we're blessed in that we have the largest oyster and clam aquaculture industry in the nation.
Is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty incredible there. So the key is how do we keep those things going? Water quality is a big deal. And then coastal resiliency is a big deal. We've done a lot of work with Virginia Institute of Marine Science and Old Dominion University in making sure that we look at how do we do coastal resiliency. Being on the Armed Services Committee, I'm focused on making sure that our United States military does the same thing. We have some projects underway with Langley Air Force Base, with Naval Station Norfolk, to make sure we're doing things there so those bases can withstand the effects of what happens when a storm event comes in.
Mm-hmm.
We see higher tides now and higher impacts of storm surge when those things happen. So coastal resiliency is key, conserving the resources that we have in the bay. And there's some good news stories there, too, as we see what's happening. We see crab populations rebounding somewhat. We see good, healthy fin fish stocks. So some good things happening there. You know, the Chesapeake Bay is a great economic engine, not just from what it produces, but also the impact it has on tourism. I mean, we know Colonial Beach has seen a surge in tourism there, mm-hmm. with people that come there to visit.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that more of those things happen. It's also a very desirable place for people to move to. Many people retiring from areas, population centers, look at Colonial Beach, and we've seen a resurgence there. So all good things. We know that a healthy natural environment is key to local economies on the waterfront. We know coastal resiliency is something we're going to have to deal with,
mm-hmm.
as we see the impacts of greater storm surges. And we see, too, the value of the natural resources that we find in our Chesapeake Bay ecosystem.
Well, as I'm sure you know, Rob, we have taken some steps recently to make changes to our water treatment plant.
Yes.
And I'd like your opinion on that. I'll tell you, first of all, being the liaison for that particular section, I think we've made some wonderful strides.
Yes.
I think that it was probably untenable what we were doing before.
Mm-hmm.
And having contractors who know what they're doing have improved the quality of the water there, mm-hmm. immeasurably. Do you think that's a fair statement?
I do. Listen, I think you all have done wonders there. And years ago when I was on the town council in Montrose, you know,
okay.
we went through the construction of a new sewer system there. I went through the learning curve on how we make sure we properly manage that sewer system. We have a number of pump stations there. We all know pumps are mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
If they do fail, what's your contingency plan? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, to Colonial Beach's credit, with the incident that happened in 2023, I think it was a great learning curve. I think you all worked together with the state and federal agencies to say, okay, Let's diagnose the problem. Let's figure out what it is. Let's make sure that if we have a mechanical failure or a breakdown, what do we do to make sure we can respond to that as quickly as possible? What are the contingencies there? What are the things that we can do immediately to prevent anything on a large scale from happening? And if there is an impact there, how do we minimize those things that happen there? Y'all have done a wonderful job with that and looking at ways to really utilize technology, utilizing various contingencies to make sure that you address, you know, either preventing these things if they are preventable, or if not, making sure that the response is immediate and minimizes the impact of these events.
One of the reasons I was particularly interested in chatting with you, Rob, other than, of course, you're a representative, but is your background as a marine scientist.
Yes.
Could you flesh that out for us a little bit?
Absolutely. Well, I worked with the Department of Health for 27 years, 18 of those within the Division of Shellfish Sanitation, which is a part of the Seafood Safety Program, and we were out on the water every day collecting samples, looking at the bacteriological and virological health of the waters, the same with the shellfish and crabs that came out of the waters. So I was intimately involved with that for a number of years. And it really allowed me to see, you know, the impact that things that happen on land have on our water. Mm-hmm. And the water quality has a direct impact on the value of the shellfish that are there. Because, as you know, water has to be very, very clean in order for you to harvest shellfish. And we've been pretty blessed in Virginia that, you know, we have lots of areas that are open to the taking of shellfish. In fact, we've been able to recover some areas, that is, open more areas by doing some pretty intensive things on the upland side to make sure we mitigate or remove sources of pollution. So that's been a great story of success. I mean, we've seen it in places like the Lynn Haven River, where they've opened up significant areas because Virginia Beach said, hey, listen, we're going to figure out where we have problems with stormwater overflow. They have an older sewer system where they have combined stormwater and sewers. And what they've said is, hey, we're going to fix some of those things. They also did some studies there to figure out where do they have places where pipes are broken or cracked, and you have exfiltration of sewage into those areas, and they leach then into the waterways and then cause elevated bacterial levels. So it just goes to show that there are a lot of things that can be done, and when you put those efforts in place, it's amazing how our natural systems respond when you take a little bit of that pressure off of them. So those are things that I, you know, really was focused on. We used to, and still do, what are called surveys. We do shoreline surveys. So we go to every house in the immediate Chesapeake Bay watershed and survey, is the sewer system working? Is there an issue there? Is there any potential source of pollution? And if it is, we identify it, and then the local health departments go and work with the owners. And if they are point source pollutions that are creating challenges, then the DEQ will go and work with localities to go ahead and fix those problems where they're fixable, and make sure we put solutions in place. So it really gave me a scope and understanding of the breadth and depth of the things that we face in the state. But the thing that I also learned was that there was a very high degree of resolve and interest in local governments and property owners to fix these things. They don't want to do things that degrade the water quality in the area. I mean, that affects property values.
Of course.
In fact, I was just meeting with somebody the other day that lives in the city of Pocosin. And a beautiful home, and they were there. They said, Rob, you know, we used to have a little sign out here that says, you know, area prohibited for the taking of shellfish. And they're like, you know, we didn't like that. It was right on the point in front of their house. So they went ahead and worked with the local health department and said, you know, what can we do? Are there things here that we can work on? And sure enough, they worked on them, and guess what? Some of those areas were able to be open, so that sign is no longer in front of their house.
Right.
So it just goes to show that there's a lot of interest in doing that, and people just want to know, what can I do? And local governments want to know, what can they do? Just like Colonial Beach wanted to, hey, what can we do to fix this? And to Colonial Beach's credit, you said, we're going to fix this, and we're going to make it work, and here we are. So,
well, that's interesting in that you have the background with Montrose, so small government, small town council stuff. And we have been attempting to work through our I&I issues.
Yes.
Okay. And but there's not an unlimited amount of money for things. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my ulterior reasons for coming to visit you today is a Front Royal boy is not going to leave without asking at least for some chicken or some money, right?
Sure.
So, but what I'm hoping is you can give us some common sense things that people can do to assist those efforts.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the sewer system there, obviously, any infrastructure that ages, you have to try to keep up with it. And there are some dollars out there, and we're glad to work with you to try to identify sources of money in the state or source of money elsewhere. In fact, I'd love to connect you with places like Virginia Beach. It did a lot on infiltration, looking at how do we fix some of those things. So they had some great ideas there, too. So I'll make sure we connect you there, and we'll look, too, about any sort of federal sources of funding. A lot of times you'll find the Department of Rural Development or Division of Rural Development under the Department of Agriculture will sometimes have some of those improvement dollars available for smaller localities. So those are a lot of the dollars that we used when we did things in Montrose. So glad to work with you on those things. As far as citizens, I think the big thing that citizens can do, Rick, is this, is, you know, sewer systems, especially ones the size of the one in Colonial Beach, you know, do have their limitations. Mm-hmm. And especially with the strength of the effluent that comes to the plant. And a lot of localities, especially if they have commercial customers, require pretreatment because a plant can only take so much strength of wastewater before it overwhelms the plant. Sometimes it hurts the plant. So what I always encourage folks to do is really two things. One is to think about what you put down the sink. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, don't, if you can avoid it, don't, you know, if you have a chemical, you know, a set of chemicals in a bottles or whatever that are expired or whatever, you know, don't just say, I'll just pour it down the sink. In Westmoreland County, the landfill a couple times a year actually takes these chemicals. You just bring them there to the landfill and they get them properly disposed of. So don't put things down the sink that you can avoid, especially chemicals. And then the other big thing too is just manage your water use. There are a lot of things that we can do to limit water use. So if you're going to replace a toilet, of course, today under the law, you know, you don't find any 5 or 3 gallon flush toilets anymore. They're all a gallon and a half now. Mm-hmm. So, but if you and remember, if you're replacing a toilet, you know, make sure that you are you know, understanding. If you have a choice between fixing an old one and putting a new one in, go ahead and get a new one to put it in, and it will reduce the amount of water. That reduces your water bill. The same thing too, especially on water flow outside. You know, most of the fixtures and toilets inside now, by law, are all low water use. But if you have a choice, replace an older fixture with a newer fixture, which restricts the amount of water flow, and then two, just be mindful of how you use things outdoors. I understand when things get dry, you know, the first thing is I want to water my grass to make sure that it looks good. But there are a lot of things that you can do. I know I do it in my yard, and that is find varieties of grass to plant that are drought resistant. You know, and it may brown a little bit, but the grass doesn't die. It comes back when the rains come back. Right. So it's just little things like that. I think if people just really think about those things, and most people I find want to do those things, they just sometimes struggle to figure out where to get the information to do that.
And perhaps we need to do a better job of getting that information to them.
I agree. Do that. Just let them know what are water restrictive devices like toilets and water fixtures. The local extension office, Virginia Tech Extension Office, has a wonderful program to let them know what can they plant in their yard that are species that are drought resistant, and then you don't have to worry as much about watering. So they're just little things that can be done, and the Extension Service would be glad to come to town. In fact, I would urge you to contact them and let them do a little seminar in town. You know, do it on a Saturday where people can come out and say, hey, what can I do to be able to reduce that water usage? And then just let folks know too, hey, if you got a device there that just isn't working right, it still leaks, even put a new washer in it, you know, go ahead and replace it, because the replacement fixtures and toilets today are all low water use.
So, great advice. Mm-hmm. One of the things that, and it's a tragic situation, Rob, in that we have some streets that are losing the battle with Poseidon.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you probably know where they are.
Yes, yeah.
Obviously, the town doesn't have the money to dredge there, put up riprap, so forth and so on. What are some of our options, either from a citizen's point of view, of steps they can take, from a municipal point of view,
right,
steps that we can take, and where we can ask for assistance on those things?
Sure. Well, you know, what you want to make sure is that you do this along a part of the shoreline where you can have an impact. Because what happens is if one property only puts in a seawall or riprap and keeps water from coming on their property, mm-hmm. but people on the other side don't, what happens to the water? It gets pushed up even more onto their property. So, right. you know, first of all, what you want to do is to be able to address sections of shoreline in areas where you know if you put, you know, a structure or some mitigation there from one point to another, then you can address the flooding that happens there. And that's all about elevation. You don't want to isolate somebody who's at a lower elevation by making it higher on other properties.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to make sure that you do the engineering work up front. And then the second thing, too, is to, you know, look at where there are dollars for mitigation. And sometimes there are not dollars available, but many times there's technical advice that's available free of charge. And
okay.
In fact, I'm just getting ready to go down to VIMS now for the Sea Grant program. The Sea Grant program has a shoreline advisory service that does a great job in coming in and saying, hey, this is what you should do. This is how you can do it in the most economic way possible. And that way you can at least have a plan. And then a plan will scope the materials and the labor that's needed. So then you can price it out and you can figure out, well, what's the scope of what we have to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
Another element, too, is that the availability many times of state and federal funding doesn't nearly cover the whole project.
Right.
But we'll work with you to see if there are sources there. And sometimes there's limited sources. I've worked with folks that are on the local wetlands boards, and they are always looking where can we get funds for these shoreline projects, and like I said, they're tough to come by. But when I was in the General Assembly, we did get a piece of legislation through that allowed local governments, at the direction of their citizens, to say, hey, listen, we would like to be able to collect some dollars from residents in that area who would directly benefit from this,
mm-hmm.
be able to put that into a fund and then use that collectively to build something. As I said, what you would prefer not to happen is one person do it and then they create negative impacts on everybody else.
Right.
But you can actually do this. Now, it's up to the citizens. Everybody would have to vote. So you could designate essentially a service area. They would have to vote. It would have to be 50% plus one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could put together and said, here's the cost of the project. Here's the fee that we would assess. And we put that into essentially a proprietary account that says it will only be used for this particular purpose. And then that money will accrue in that account, and then when it gets to a point where it's enough to execute the project, then they can do that. But then you can also continue to put dollars in the account, and again, whatever fee that they mm-hmm. determine is necessary for maintenance, because at some point you're going to have to maintain whatever sure. structure or things that you put in. So there is the ability to do that, but the first thing to do is to get the project designed and scoped so you know exactly what you're talking about. And then you can go, because when you have a plan, you can go to somebody and say, well, listen, are there any dollars that are available
right.
to help with this? And as I said, in all the instances that I'm aware of, the dollars there most of the time do not cover the full cost
mm-hmm.
of the project. Sometimes it'll help defray some of the cost, and then it's a matter of local government and then citizens that are looking at, well, how do we make up the difference?
Right. Well, and we have to remember that beach is part of the title of the town.
It is.
Without the beach,
that's right.
We're just colonial.
Well, and that's exactly, and that's the key there. That's the attraction that people have, and you know, you go there on any weekend, you know, and the beach there is very busy. Which is good. It's good for the businesses there. Good for Colonial Beach, and there's still people that I know that you know go, hey, you know, when I talk about Montrose, they go, oh, that's near Colonial Beach. And I'm like, yes, it is.
So some of the property, beach property there is disputed.
Yes.
So with what you described, that doesn't really need to be resolved because the mitigation is going to happen further out.
That's right. Yeah, the mitigation a lot of times, if it's the beach proper area there, as you know, you have the beach and then you have the structures behind where the beach is. You know, really, I think what you're talking about are some of the homes that are on the water where there isn't, you know, very little of any beach.
Right.
And then they're right on the water there. And then the question is if there's no structure there to keep the higher tides from coming into the property, then what happens? And that's where you have Mother Nature asserting her will on those property owners.
Right.
So I think those are the areas that are the biggest element. And again, it's how do you properly design something that has the intended effect that doesn't cause, you know, a bigger problem somewhere else. I mean, we're going through that with designing things in places like Norfolk Naval Station and Langley Air Force Base, which are big land areas. Mm-hmm. But what you want to make sure is that the Navy base doesn't do something that creates a negative effect on the city of Norfolk.
Right.
So let's say you put this structure all around the Navy base, and all of a sudden the water doesn't come there, but when a storm surge happens, it comes up on the other side of where the structure is, the seawall, whatever it may be, and then all of a sudden you get more flooding in Norfolk because you push the water away, and all of a sudden it's got no place to go but those areas. So the good news, though, is that the city of Norfolk is working hand-in-hand with Naval Station Norfolk. Pocosin, York County, City of Hampton are all working hand in hand with Langley Air Force Base to make sure anything that happens is done in unison, in conjunction with the local government.
Well, the important thing, Rob, and what I've taken some hope from is that these aren't insurmountable problems. And you've given us some real strategies towards resolving the problem as opposed to inertia and waiting for God to win, as far as that goes.
Amen, Rick. And the quickest first step that you can take is to be able to scope the problem, mm-hmm. and then do the design, and at least have, you know, if the design is a single option or multiple options, is to be able to do that. And there are some agencies there that can help you with that. The Shoreline Advisory Service at VIMS would be a great place to start, and we're glad to help you with that and get them in to say, hey, these are the things that you need to do. The projects too, you know, have to go through a permitting process, so we'll also connect you with the permitting agencies, whether it's the Corps of Engineers or the Department of Conservation and Recreation, wherever the jurisdiction lies, we're glad to connect you with those folks, because what you want to do is to get their thoughts and ideas up front,
mm-hmm.
so you can make sure you get those in. The worst thing you can do is to go ahead and say, well, we've done all this plan, and then the permitting agencies say, well, no, you can't do this, and no, you can't do that. You want to vet all those things up front, so we're glad to help you through that process.
Rob, you've been so kind with your time. I'm going to impose upon it by asking you one more question,
sure,
if I
absolutely.
May.
Absolutely, yes.
As you know, there is a bit of a push-pull between Dahlgren,
mm-hmm.
and our citizens. There's a noise issue, which I don't know can be resolved, but also there is fear that Dahlgren is exacerbating pollution levels, mm-hmm. in the Potomac.
Right.
Can you address that?
Yeah, Dahlgren is under the same requirements as anybody else. So they have to abide by the Clean Water Act. They have to abide by all the stormwater management elements. So whatever they do on base has to comply with those laws. If people have issues, and so I know the base commander, know the director there, I'm glad to connect them so the base can address those things. But again, they're required to do the same things as anybody else to make sure that they're environmentally responsible. You know, it's a military base, so obviously there's some operational things that they are going to continue to do.
Mm-hmm.
That is the largest and longest range in the entire United States of America, so it does occupy a critical national asset and national need,
mm-hmm.
and they try to mitigate, you know, the noise and those sorts of things. And I always tell citizens, you know, let them know, because if there are things that are happening that they can mitigate, I know that they're glad to do that. Sometimes they can't, but I find them always willing to listen, and I'm always willing to intercede on their behalf and make sure that the base reaches out to them. So any of your citizens that have those issues, please, you can contact the base. There's a number to contact the base, but you can also contact our office, and we'll make sure that we connect you with folks on the base that can address those issues and make sure that they let citizens know, you know, what are they doing to protect the environment? What are they doing to, as best they can, mitigate noise? Now, listen, there's going to be noises there. Mm-hmm. You know, where I remember growing up, when the old 16-inch guns would go off, there literally the China cabinets would rattle.
Right.
And then across the way, remember, I have AP Hill across the river too.
Oh, yes.
So we get the 155 howitzers from AP Hill, and it used to be in the day the 16-inch guns,
right.
at Dahlgren. So we don't have nearly the noise levels there that occur. But there's still some testing that goes on there. Where I know folks obviously are impacted by the sound. So.
Rob, it's always good to talk to somebody who arguably might like to talk even more than I do. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Uh-huh.
The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership.